Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Your Honor, this case...
How did your client pronounce his name?
Schma, Your Honor.
Schma?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, I guess. Could I just ask you a preliminary question? I assume there's some kind of typographical glitch. But on page 4 of your brief, footnote 3, you say AT&T's bill of cost and Schma's future losses remain pending in the district court. What does that mean, Schma's future losses remain pending in the district court?
Your Honor, I apologize for that footnote. I should have clarified it better with the court. The district court did not rule on the future damages once it granted the judgment as a matter of law. I concede, Your Honor, that once the judgment as a matter of law was entered against us, the future damages would not have been ruled on by the district court.
But there's a final judgment. There's nothing left in...
That's correct, Your Honor. Your Honors, this case has already been determined by the conscience of our communities. A reasonable jury made up of an individual who was working in an optometrist's office, an individual who was familiar with computer modifications, someone who had already ruled...
Completely irrelevant who the jurors were.
Your Honors, to look at what the court has done here as far as granting a judgment as a matter of law and as to the new trial issues, it is our contention that the jury verdict should be reinstated because the evidence in this case was so strong as to all of the issues raised. When the court granted the judgment as a matter of law, prior to doing that in the trial, when he deferred ruling, the judge himself indicated it was the evidence was sufficiently close to defer the case at that time. Close cases, Your Honors, are what juries decide. The evidence as to whether...
Yes, but very often a judge will if he anticipates the trial ending soon, he'll say, well, you know, let's see what the jury does, since if the jury, you know, found a verdict for the defendant, that would moot the question of whether the defendant was entitled to judgment as a matter of law. Let me ask you about your argument that about AT&T's having waived or forfeited its right to seek judgment. That's an interesting question. What would it mean? I mean, suppose it's the case that that the defense really were entitled to judgment as a matter of law. Suppose there were no evidence for you, really. But nevertheless, defendant had failed to move forward. Had failed to renew its motion to close with all the evidence, and you argue, well, that's it, you know, then they're not entitled to the judgment. But the judge would order a new trial, and then in that new trial he'd grant judgment as a matter of law, wouldn't he? So I don't see what the remedy is.
Your Honor, in this particular case, I believe it was waived. We certainly had presented evidence to the court in the hypothetical.
But suppose it was waived. I mean, all that would mean. The judge. I mean, your position is that the judge could not grant judgment as a matter of law because AT&T had failed to renew that motion because of all the evidence. But that doesn't affect the judge's power to order a new trial. So if he ordered a new trial, then he would notice, say, that there wasn't enough evidence for a trial, and then he'd grant a judgment for motion as a motion for judgment as a matter of law. So what would have been gained by this strict forfeiture rule?
Your Honor, I think what would have been gained is that we could have then, in the new trial, or in your hypothetical, the individual could then introduce the evidence, perhaps in a different fashion, same evidence, which would then...
Well, is it your question that you have more evidence?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Introducing the same evidence in a different fashion does nothing to the Rule 50 calculus. Is it your position that you had more evidence that could be introduced at a new trial to avoid Judge Posner's conundrum
Except I think that is a possibility.
Anything is a possibility. We could be hit by an asteroid tomorrow. Is it your position that you had it?
Your Honor, it is our position that a new trial is not necessary in this case.
Right.
That we have
the question. That's not the question, though. Because your opponent says, look, you didn't... I mean, the purpose of having to renew the motion is to give the plaintiff a chance to present rebuttal evidence. And they say you don't have any rebuttal evidence, and therefore there was no harm done by their failure to renew the motion. So,
Your Honor, we could have brought in Dr. Kazvir had we known to testify in person as opposed to merely introducing his medical records. That was something that we could have considered.
Was there more evidence that would be got at in that way?
Dr. Kazvir could have been clearer and more succinct, perhaps, Your Honor, as to his view, as to the need for a finding of significant limitations of Mr. Schmai. However, again, in this case, Judge McDade...
But the precise question would be, could you, or would you have, if you had known that the judge, notwithstanding the failure of AT&T to renew the motion, if you thought the judge would still be thinking about the possibility of judgment as a matter of law, is there evidence you would have introduced that would have dissuaded him? And just having the Dr. Kastner in person would not necessarily dissuade the district judge. In other words, were you mousetrapped in some way by the fact that you thought, once the motion was not renewed, that there was no need to worry about judgment as a matter of law?
Well, and Your Honor, I can only answer in the same way I have. We would have brought in Dr. Kazvir, who may have been able to clarify the record as to his medical records. In this case, however, Your Honors, for Judge McDade to conclude there was no evidence that George Schmai was disabled or was impaired beyond the job that he was in is clearly contrary to the record in this case. Mr. Schmai testified he cannot see and cannot process information.
You know what I think the problem with your case is? That I think what you're really arguing is that AT&T didn't seek to accommodate his medical problem because clearly he can't spend 8 hours a day reading a computer screen. That's his problem. But that's a separate issue which you don't even reach until you find he's disabled. Now it appears that although he has an unfortunate condition, he can do most jobs perfectly well. I'm sure there are other jobs he can't do, but he can't do what he wants to, or the job that he's kind of best trained and experienced for, which requires, you know, spending all day in front of a computer screen. But there are zillions of other jobs that he can do perfectly well, and therefore, how can he be disabled?
Your Honor, he can do other jobs, as he's testified. He testified with a great deal of extra effort on his part. Now, mitigating measures are to be considered by this court, but so too are the negative effects of those mitigating measures.
But, you know, most of the people in the country have some kind of problem that affects their ability to work, and they're not all disabled.
Your Honor, Mr. Schmai's disability is as to his ability to see. We all have glasses on
but
here
look,
today,
he's been
Your
working
Honor.
For many years successfully, so he obviously, look, he gets hit a driver's license.
Your Honor, he drives, and he did testify as to how he has to map out his destination.
How did he get a driving license? Because when you go and take an eye test for a driving license, they don't let you map out the, you know, ELON or whatever it is. So
Your Honor, I would contend that the driver's license testing certainly is not that stringent. Mr. Schmai testified, and the jury heard him.
Yeah, really.
It is, Your Honor.
If what's said in your brief is true, your client should give up his driver's license immediately. I don't want to be on the same road with him.
Well,
Your Honor, and what was said in our brief was what Mr. Schmai testified to, was what Dr. Brownstone The board-certified ophthalmologist who AT&T sent Mr. Schmid to was what Dr. Brownstone indicated and what Dr. Casbier indicated. There is no other case, Your Honors, that this court has reviewed, nor that any other circuit has reviewed, as to whether one's eye condition is protected under the ADA.
Let me put the question in terms of the Supreme Court's latest articulation. Toyota against Williams says that disability means, and I'm quoting the court, an impairment that prevents or severely restricts the individual from doing activities that are of central importance to most people's daily lives. That's the end of the quote. The argument that your client is making here is that his disability prevents him from reading more than 50% of the time. Is it correct, do you think, to say that reading more than 50% of the time is of central importance to most people's daily lives? I can think of very few people who read more than 50% of the time or whose occupation requires them to do that.
Your Honor, with all due respect, Mr. Schmid's contention was also that his condition affects everything. He testified to that. If Mr. Schmid were in front of you today, as the jury was able to observe, Mr. Schmid would be having to move his head back and forth like this in the hopes that his eyes that dart from right to left would catch you in the proper glimpse as he was twisting his head and he could focus for a minute. He indicated, pursuant to questions by Judge McDade, I can't see like a normal person. When I look at the jury, he said, he testified, I do not see the juror fully. I cannot see. It is as if I am seeing from a digital camera, he testified. He has an inability, a difficulty at a minimum, in focusing in on a subject on a day-to-day basis in anything he is attempting to do. Your Honors, during the course of the trial, Mr. Schmid could not use the same technological equipment that each one of us could use. He could not use it. That was clear to the jury, and the jury saw that. Mr. Schmid testified, if he is lucky, he can focus. And if not, he doesn't. With his eyeglasses on, he gets headaches. He suffers fatigue. He is stressed. With his eyeglasses off, his vision is 20/80, 20/100.
Could I ask you to turn back to my question and address your claim to the terms of the Supreme Court's standard?
Your Honor, Mr. Schmid is disabled because of his vision problem. As to the condition, the manner, and duration in the way he sees, that affects everything he does.
Why is he in this line? There are a lot of perfectly good jobs which don't require much reading, being a salesman, for example.
Your Honor, he had worked for AT&T 14 days short of his 25 years.
No, that's what you're saying. He seems to have chosen a line of work which is reading intensive.
Your Honor, with all due respect, he didn't choose the reading intensity. AT&T placed him in that job once he moved.
Yes, but before then, before his last job at AT&T, it was still a reading intensive type of work he did, wasn't it?
Your Honor, it was more of a director's role. In fact, Linda Reiner testified he was moved to Bloomington to be a program director. More of a director's role, supervising individuals who would have been doing most of the computer work. He did not anticipate this job, let alone when AT&T put him on a development plan, which restricted him, unlike other individuals, from doing the job as they were able to do. Your Honors.
Well, you want to save the rest of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, Judge. Thank you.
Mr. Jackson?
May it please the court, we feel the court can and should affirm the judgment below. Alternatively, if the court
chooses. We didn't really say much about our cases, which seem to have, which seem to be pretty strict about the need to renew the motion for judgment notwithstanding the verdict. Or,
Your Honor, we recognize this court has a tough rule in Rule 50 cases in a renewal. The court hasn't addressed the situation in which the district court defers, as the district court specifically did here. In this case, the district court had three motions before it at the close of the plaintiff's case. The first motion was from a motion for judgment as a matter of law on the major life activity of working. The court granted that motion. The second motion was the motion as to the major life activity of seeing. The judge, the court passed that motion for the time being and deferred it, in his words, in his written opinion. The third motion that was before the court was our motion that the plaintiff had not established that he was a qualified individual with a disability. The district court denied our motion. So the plaintiff knew, so for the very short duration and the remainder of the trial, that the district, this was an open matter before the district court. The other courts, in these circumstances, when a district court has deferred in the trial context, have said that they will not not hold the matter to be waived. And those other courts have equally strong language in their cases, admonishing litigants to make the motion at the close of all the evidence. So that's what we're hanging our hat on, Your Honor. And we're hanging our hat also on the specific posture of Judge McDade's decision. It's very important to understand exactly what Judge McDade did in his ruling. In making the rulings that I've just described, Judge McDade informed the plaintiff very specifically what was left of his case. And the plaintiff had attempted to put in evidence about his daily life activities outside the workplace. He did try to put some of those things in. And the plaintiff's brief in this court argues that the plaintiff had attempted to put in evidence of how his impairment affected him in daily life activities. And here is what Judge McDade said in his opinion at the close of plaintiff's case. Judge McDade said in a written opinion, I quote, "There is no evidence in the record that plaintiff's impairment prevents him from doing any of the multitude of things the average person does in leading a productive life. There is no evidence in the record that he cannot drive with classes, type, read, write, or perform any bodily function or engage in any other work requirement, except the one extensive reading requirement of the GSM of his GSM position." So the district court had ruled at that point that the plaintiff's proofs as to substantial life activities were simply insufficient. And the district court, at that point in the proceedings, kept open the question on seeing only because the plaintiff had put in evidence that he could not do the specific requirements of his GSM job, and it was on that basis the case went to the jury. We submit, obviously, that a person's ability to do the functions of a particular job is not what the Supreme Court was talking about in Toyota, and it's not what this court's precedents prescribe. It behooved the plaintiff to establish that he was substantially limited in major life activities of seeing based upon his daily life activities, not how tough a particular job is. When the district court granted the motion at the close of the trial, it did it for precisely the same reasons. The district court changed its mind. It determined that his ability to do his job, this specific GSM job, was not relevant to the inquiry, and granted the motion at that point. The other aspect that makes this case different is that there is an unappealed finding in this case that Mr. Smy is not substantially limited in the major life activity of working. That unappealed finding was made after the first finding was made by the court in writing at the close of the plaintiff's case, and the plaintiff hasn't appealed it here. We submit on the facts of this case that finding should preclude any finding as to seeing. The only evidence that was left open in the case, or the only matter that was left open in the case, was Mr. Smy's ability or lack thereof to do a particular job, and that's something the district court concluded at the end was not an appropriate consideration. The notion that work, that a finding as to working precludes seeing, I think is also logical and makes sense. One might imagine a major life activity such as reproduction, which has no bearing on working, but I think most major life activities that come up in ADA cases are directly relevant to working. For example, a blind person certainly is impaired in the major life activity of seeing. But that same person is also barred from doing entire classes of jobs, which is the definition of being impaired in the major life activity of working. So I think that working and seeing, at least in this case, on the facts of this case, are coterminous. Mr. Smy's reply brief didn't make any comment on the deferral or working arguments we made in our brief to the court. That's because there is no evidence that Mr. Smy would have put on that he didn't put on in light of what the court was doing down below. The Dr. Casbier reference that was made by counsel, Dr. Casbier was a physician whose testimony was, it was actually submitted through letters and so on, but it stipulated testimony was that Mr. Smy was unable to do the job, the requirements of the GSM job. That's the sum total of what Dr. Casbier was going to say. And Mr. Smy agreed with that. Mr. Smy agreed that he could not do the requirements of the GSM job. So there was simply nothing to be added in this case by Dr. Casbier's additional testimony by Dr. Casbier. If the court chooses not to affirm on simply affirm this case, we'd submit that there's more than ample basis for a new trial. The district court did not abuse its discretion in alternatively ordering a new trial. As we've just argued, there's simply no evidence, and it goes to the question Your Honor asked at the beginning of the argument today. There's nothing for really the district court to do. It's already been determined by Judge McDade that Mr. Smy is not substantially limited in the major life activity of seeing, with the one footnote that he can't do the GSM job. That was Judge McDade's determination. On a new trial,
in Social Security cases, we've recognized that a person could be disabled and yet working because he'd made heroic efforts to work despite his disability. And isn't that arguable here, that he really has a terrible condition, even if the people at the driver's office don't recognize this, but he has a terrible problem, but he has struggled and managed to find employment, but he could still be disabled.
I understand those cases, Your Honor, but I guess the analysis under the ADA is different. Mr. Smy was required to put on evidence of daily life activities that he could not do, and his testimony really is that he, while driving on the freeway, he has to get up closer to cars before he can read the license plates, and when he goes into...
Well, what if you couldn't see without carrying binoculars with you? Wouldn't you be disabled?
I think that would be a closer case. It's not Mr. Smy, Your Honor. Mr. Smy's case...
You would appear closer if you were peering through the binoculars.
I would be. I was trying to think of a way to get the word parson in the argument, too.
Depends on how wet they are, because, of course, all of us are wearing a form of binoculars.
I haven't gotten the bifocals yet, either.
They're not that hard to live with, so that should be a comfort to them.
Our point would be that it certainly wasn't abuse of discretion to order a new trial as to the seeing point. The same is true as to the qualified individual point. Mr. Smy had all kinds of problems, wholly apart from any sight-based reason, and he couldn't do, his physician, Dr. Casbier, said he couldn't do the GSM job, and although he's pointed to various jobs which he said were available in the AT&T computer job search system, he testified unequivocally that he knew nothing about any particular job, meaning whether they were vacant or whether he had specific information as to his qualifications. Finally,
didn't AT&T just enlarge the size of the type on his screen?
Actually, Your Honor, Mr. Smy testified that wouldn't work. It was a larger monitor.
I thought his position at trial was that would have worked.
Well, he brought in an expert, a guy named Helpingstein, who tried to say that by making putting larger type on a screen, he could do his job. But Mr. Smy admitted that it's not the size of the type. He admitted it's not the size of the type that's his problem. The problem is continuous reading from computers combined with the stress of the job.
But it's the percentage of time he needs to focus his eyes.
He's able to read quite well for a while.
Right.
But
it's the percentage of time the eyes need to achieve fine focus.
I don't know if he testified that.
Not just reading a computer screen. That would be true with reading ordinary paper. Yeah.
And at the intensity of the job. I mean, filling the customer orders and so on. Yes, exactly. So, Your Honors, for the reasons we've argued, we respectfully request that the court affirm, if not send it back for a new trial on the issues that I've just outlined, as well as for the additional matters we've briefed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jackson. Ms. McGrath, how much time does she have? 1 minute?
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, binoculars wouldn't even help Mr. Smy see better. Mr. Smy has difficulty focusing, and it is a luck if he gets a focus, and if not, he can't see like normal people can see on a daily basis. How does that affect him on a daily basis? It affects everything in his life. And that Mr. Smy accommodated by working longer hours, by putting more stress on himself throughout his career, is not a means or a reason to deny him protection under the ADA. The U.S. Supreme Court has recognized it is significant limitations that we are looking at and not utter inabilities. Justice Bauer asked counsel as to why didn't AT&T merely enlarge the screen. I disagree with counsel's representation to this court that Mr. Smy said that wouldn't work. In fact, Mr. Helpingstein, who had worked with individuals with visual disabilities for in excess of 10 years, testified it would, with the addition of a screen reader software, if necessary, under additional stress. Your Honors, I see that my time is out. I do ask, on behalf of Mr. Smy, that the court seriously consider the record in this case and order the court to reinstate the jury verdict. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you to both counsel.